Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. For many years, people have been moving from the countryside to the big cities. The towns and villages leave behind, then not only become structurally weak, but above all, desolate. This worldwide phenomenon can also be observed in China. In the villages of the southeastern Chinese county of Songyang, architect Chen Qian and her office DNA Design and Architecture have, together with the provincial government, found answers on this structural change. Her strategy, which she calls architectural acupuncture, is not new and involves strengthening the identity of the villages with mostly new cultural buildings and conversions, at the same time promoting local crafts. The strategy, however, has resulted in something that they didn't expect. People are starting to come back from the cities. Initially, this was because of the pandemic, but now they are also starting businesses and relocating the center of their lives back to the countryside. Is this the end of the task? Or do we now need new strategies to turn small interventions into a big transformation? That's what we, Diane Slavich and Eva Herrmann, talk about today with Xu Tianqian, founding principal of DNA Design and Architecture, in our podcast.
And I'm introducing you. Xu Tianqian is the founding principal of DNA Design and Architecture and professor in practice at Tsinghua University School of Architecture. She has received numerous awards, including the 2022 Swiss Architectural Award, the 2023 Berlin Art Prize, the Kunstpreis Berlin, the Marcus Prize 2023, and the Global Award for Sustainable Architecture by UNESCO, among many others. Hello and welcome to today's Jung Talks podcast. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Diane and Eva. It's really my pleasure to talk to you on this show.
You have made a name for yourself with your different approach. Instead of the grand gesture, your success is based on small interventions. It's architectural acupuncture. What do you mean by this, and how would you describe this approach?
I like how you say it's small interventions, because for me, we always consider rural as a very delicate system. It's not just about, you know, the density of buildings, but rather integration of people living on this land together, integrating with the landscape, with the nature as a ecosystem. So it's already a very sensitive, delicate existing system. So the intervention is rather to revive what was already there, what's existing, you know, belonging to the history, to the tradition and cultural values. So we're always talking about, you know, looking into existing conditions, reevaluating the local resource and to revive the heritage, which could really bring potential social, cultural and economic value to this very specific place.
And how did you start it? What were your first projects?
Well, it wasn't really by planning at all in the beginning. In January 2014, so it was really 10 years ago, we were invited by the Songyang County for a different project, which is still ongoing. It's not finished yet. But this was really the beginning of a new exploring of the rural region, because Songyang is a very typical agricultural county in China. It has 50,000 population living in its county urban center and 190,000 population inhabitants in the thousands of small ancient villages in the mountain area around the county urban center. So the first invitation brought us to this region. And we were really fascinated by the landscape, the agriculture, nature, and also all these small ancient villages in the mountain. So during the first project, we actually also started our own research trips, visiting the small ancient villages in the mountains. And this actually brought to a very direct communication with the local villages. So whenever we visit a village, we were often asked by the local people what to do to their home village, knowing that we are architects coming from the cities. So that started all these small collaborations with the different villages and as pro bono projects in the first year. But it was also a very nice process for us to learn about the context and the real needs of all these ancient villages, because we were always working with a more urban context before. So I would say this was really a wonderful journey for us to have this direct communication and to understand the reality.
You say that your projects are internationally small, both architecturally and in terms of investment, in order to reduce the barriers to acceptance?
One thing is that when you're working with the rural context, you're always short of money. The budget is always tight. And very often you have to bring a proposal and at the same time look for potential funding from different resources, from the local county government or provincial or the city level, from the cultural department or from agricultural departments. So it's always a process to bring an economic aspect into the design. At the same time, I also think, you know, when you are working in a village, it's not about the new intervention. The focus is really with what's already there, hidden underneath maybe all these torn down buildings. But there's really a very rich culture and heritage embedded underneath this surface, this broken surface. The idea is really not about, you know, a large scale intervention, rebuilding everything, or even building something new, totally alien, foreign to the village, but rather to explore what was already there. So the focus is never about, you know, the making a big scale building, but rather by, we always call this acupunctural strategy, is to have a minimal intervention, but try to bring the maximum impact to revive this village.
What is your recipe for getting people excited about your ideas?
Well, I like the word recipe. After talking to the local people, you really have to find what makes the people, the community proud. Every village has its own legacy. The program is also very important. When working in the rural context, you want to collaborate, to integrate, but also it has to bring out the motivation from the community. So something belongs only to this village and the people are proud of. And it's really a process to restore the pride and honor.
So your work is not particular about architecture, design, style, aesthetics. Rather, it's about architecture as an enabler of cultural, but also economic and social balance. So we need this at the villages, but also in the larger cities, don't we?
I totally agree. Working with these small villages, you know, every village has a strong sense of identity, their own legacy. So we have been working with very different programs like agriculture, ancestor, a certain cultural tradition or a very specific production out of this village. And I think looking into this urban context, you also find neighborhoods, right? The sense of a community. There will be different stories as well. Something only belonging to this certain neighborhood, you know, a very unique park or a shop at the street corner. The architectural design and the program is very specific according to each village or each community or neighborhood. But overall, this becomes a systematic strategy that you can work in both rural and urban. After all, I mean, every city used to be a village back in the ancient time.
Yeah. We couldn't really believe it if we look at the huge cities in China, but of course, you're true.
Yes, they all started as small villages. You know, it could be hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Although, or because, the projects are so small, they have a precision and a poetry at the same time. Thinking about the idea of the bamboo theater is incredibly beautiful and at the same time shows the power of vernacular architecture. Also, building with local natural raw materials looks so easy and aesthetically pleasing. How do you do it? I mean, this is nothing we usually learn in our architecture studies.
You're right. It's not a very conventional architecture design at all. For me, I really like this project. It was just visiting this village in a mountain surrounded by bamboo forest many times and seeing the bamboo coming out of the mountain. Also by talking with the local people of how they deal with this bamboo. And the idea just popped up in the afternoon and then we finished the design in a few hours. And the construction was also finished in less than 10 days.
Oh, wow.
There was not even a construction. It was just this, we call it a weaving process, working, you know, by pulling all these live bamboos together. I think you have to be very familiar with everything handy in the context. So that brings the inspiration. And the design was really simple and nothing to be articulated again and again in the office. It was really done in a very short time, both design and then the completion.
So the interventions, and in this case, the artificial and nature landscape of this bamboo theater, it's linked to each village's own history and the natural context. So can something of this be transferred in another context? Or do you have strategies? Which parts of this can be transferable?
I think we have learned a lot from this collective collaboration in Songyang County for 8 years in total. And we really look into different villages, their own legacy identity, right? So that brings out very specific program and architectural language as well. And now we continue to work in other regions and we realize the acupunctural strategy is not only applying to specific villages, but can also apply to the region. For example, when we were invited to the neighbor county, Jingyun County, we realized that, you know, this county also has many small villages, but the region, the county itself has a very specific issue with the abandoned quarries. And it really applied to the entire county region with over 3,000 quarries left over and abandoned, which was a really critical issue for the county. And then we proposed a design intervention to revive these quarries as the specific local issue for Jingyun County. And later on, when we visited Fujian region, you know, the Zhangzhou city, for example, has this Fujian Tulou. This is a world cultural heritage with this large-scale ram earth and timber structure for hundreds of people living together mm-hmm. and fighting together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Exactly. So it's a both collective living housing and also a defense structure. But, you know, now that the original functionalities are not needed anymore, and again, thousands of Tulou buildings, vernacular buildings were abandoned. So we also brought out a design strategy, again, minimal and acupunctural intervention to revive or to reuse these abandoned vernacular buildings. I just realized that, you know, we always believe in these small intervention, small and the most effective intervention, which can be economic and also practical. But at the same time, this intervention is not only limited to each village, but it can also bring to a larger scale looking into regional issues. So after Songyang, we continue with this acupunctural intervention engagement with different regions. So there's a quarry issue in the Jingyun County, and there's also this abandoned vernacular Tulou buildings in Zhangzhou City. And I realized that it's a similar strategy, but actually can look into a larger scale in terms of the regional issues.
Is this only working, the interventions, because time moves more slowly in the countryside, not like in the big cities where everything is hectic? Or is it a judgment from the outside view?
No, not really. I always said that we like to look into the forgotten lands, because these are the areas that architecture and design can really provide a remedy, a solution, a treatment for certain issues, right? Maybe even more needed compared to the cities. But this can also work with the urban context as well. But I want to make a clarification that I don't like to divide urban and rural. I always think that design is small scale. If you look into individual intervention, it's very small, but it's rather to create a regional circulation. So it's a cluster of building that really representing a different identity, heritage of certain place. And among these interventions, there's already a regional, cultural, economic circulation, social circulation as well. But it's not only limited with the rural. The circulation is also with the urban center. I would say it's rather a urban-rural connectivity, because it's providing something that is also very valuable for urban residents as well. So in general, we're never working with isolated rural region, but always looking for urban-rural connectivity, urban-rural linkages. So we are actually starting a project looking into a river running from the mountain to the flatland, the urban center, and then to the ocean. And we are working with the water infrastructural facilities along this river. So it's really going through the both rural and urban. So it's never a separation or a dividend of urban and rural for us. We're never working in rural, but there's always the concept of urban-rural interaction in circulation in our minds.
Which definitely makes sense. Let's move quickly the perspective and change the continent. There have been also a number of projects in Europe where structurally weak regions have been given a boost by architectural highlights. This inflationary measure has lost its effect and is now called the Bilbao effect, with quite a negative connotation. So that's a danger, isn't it? And what are your prerequisites for success?
I mean, Bilbao effect, it's definitely very well known. I have never visited. I would love to pay a visit. But I also think it's such a phenomenon that everybody's coming for the museum, this single cultural institution. But actually, there's no information about what belongs to Bilbao in the past. And I'm more interested about how people used to live in a city on this land. And for me, that's actually very precious value. I always found people living on the land, passing a legacy through generations. That's very powerful and also very beautiful and emotional. Maybe it's just a different approach. But for me, the emotion belongs to the place, and we really connect it with the people. We always call this a collective memory. For me, that's really something I found it very touching, also inspiring. So that's how we continue to always working with the rural region, try to revive the collective memory, at the same time to restore the sense of pride and honor belonging to this place.
So part of the history or the rural context is also the reuse and the renew and recycle of material. In 2022, the MoMA in New York held an exhibition entitled Reuse, Renew, Recycle, which you were part of. This is totally implemented in traditional Chinese architecture. In Germany, these words are now the new parts for the transformation of the economy and thus of society in order to achieve the Paris climate targets. So which advice do you give us?
I would say always looking for things that are already existing. And it's always a process to reevaluate the local existing resource. And sometimes even those considered as waste, as abandoned, as negative resource can still have certain values. So this is the time that architecture and design can engage and revive the potential values.
So it seems we have forgotten a lot. That's a pity.
I agree. It's everywhere.
So let's have a small look into the future. What else are you planning at the moment? And are there new directions where the upcoming projects are taking you?
On one hand, I'm always asked, are you trying to work in an international context, you know, instead of only working in China? No, I feel like I really have the sense of belonging when I'm working with the Chinese culture and history. And instead of going out, I'm actually going back to my hometown. Our current project is actually just right in my home city. We have worked with a small island. It's called Meizhou Island. And the architectural engagement, this process was very exciting to work with the different context. We used to work in the mountain. Now we moved to a small island. On the other hand, I feel like it's somehow very personal for me to go back to my home city and really try to re-understand my own culture, my own heritage. And at the same time, also to discover new knowledge that I was not aware of. I mean, I grew up in this coastal city called Putian, and I was also at the island quite often, but I never realized how the fishermen living on the island, working with the different eco conditions, the ocean ecology, and to cultivate oyster or seaweed or fish in the ocean water. And at the same time, also how they filter the wastewater as, you know, the waste freshwater on this small island, which is really a resource that we never considered as valuable living on the continent, because this is a small island, doesn't have any fresh water, doesn't have any river. So even the wastewater can be a valuable resource. So things like this are incredibly fascinating. On one hand, it's a new knowledge open to architects. But at the same time, for me, it's also a personal journey to re-understand my own home city. And now we are also moving to this river. It's called Mulan River, belonging to Putian City. And it's really the mother river, which really nurtured over 1,000 years of history of this coastal city. And this is the river starting from the mountain and going into the ocean. And it's running through the urban city fabric and also the many small villages and agricultural land along this journey. And this is also very exciting for me to look into, you know, water facility, infrastructural facilities, but at the same time, always integrating with the agriculture and with the urban life and rural life as well.
I'm just wondering, how are you teaching your students? Like, how can you motivate them to maybe don't go for the super fancy architecture, but maybe think about where they come from and what they can do for their areas in future?
You know, education can also become the beginning of the future practice of our students. You know, they are very talented young students. And of course, there's a lot to learn in the future, but always taking a perspective that you're not waiting for a commission, a given project, but always taking the action, taking the initiative. I always call this a diagnose process, to look for the issues and bring design as a solution, as a proposal. So in terms of the studios happening with the universities, we are always looking for a real project, and students have to go to the site and talk to people to understand the real issues. And then when we are back in the school, the design can somehow become a response to the reality.
It looks like you have a different approach here too. Very brave to listen to your inner voice and making a change. It's very inspiring to listen to your words.
Thank you.
Normally, we end up our podcast with a personal question. And my question to you is there a time in the past where you would have lived and worked?
I would like to go back to the Song Dynasty, which is probably about 1,000 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But I think, no, we have many lives. It's funny that I always think by working with a different places, different region, I feel like I probably had a past life happening here. Sometimes, you know, back in the ancient time. But there's really always a kind of emotional resonance when you're collaborating with the people here in this region. It's very, very emotional, but somehow also very rewarding. It feels like you were going back to the past, looking for, I don't know, maybe the memory from a certain past life.
I remember listening to you in Zagreb a few weeks ago. Your presentation and looking at your projects and listening to your words. It was a very emotional thing. Even only by images, you could feel the atmosphere of these special places. So I can only invite all our listeners really to have a look at your projects. And if anybody is able to visit them in China, go for it. Tian, we would like to thank you very much for this great journey of inspiration.
Thank you.
We and all our listeners are undoubtedly already longing for more. Thank you very much for your time. From our side, it's time to say goodbye until the next episode of the Jung Talks Jung Architecture Podcast.